So, to give you an idea, right now we are in a series of talks that based on my article on the BC Catholics, and is the article on a series of articles that Advent last year on Introduction to the Devout Life by St. Francis de Sales. So we already are going through part one of that book about purification from sin and imperfection. We went through part two about prayer, regular prayer, and things like that. All those taught are online, you know, fatheranthonyho.com, so you can always listen to our talk. And also tonight's talk will be put online as well, so I do start the recording already. So we are on part three. Last time we talked about the beginning of part three, which is the practice of virtues. We mentioned about that we have to pick the virtues that really help us to grow in holiness. Also the virtue that we most need to practice because of our state of life, because of our shortcoming. And then we also mentioned last time about the virtue of patience, that, you know, just like virtues, you know, it's more easy to practice the small virtues. Also, it's more easy to take up the small crosses. So we try to do our best to take up our small crosses day to day, so in that way we can grow in holiness. And then today we'll talk about what we really heard of from St. Matthew Gospel, chapter 11, verse, let me find out, 29. Jesus said that, "Learn of me, for I am meek and humble of heart." So tonight I will mention about, you know, humility and meekness, those two important virtues that we have to practice. Those two important virtues, really precious virtues. And we think about those two virtues. About humility first. St. Teresa of Avila have a really good saying about humility. It's about walking in the truth, you know. If you want me to define humility, I always love to say, you know, it's about truth, but also it's about thinking less about oneself. You know, a pride person, always selfish, thinking about oneself first. But a humble person would think about God and also think about other people and less about oneself. But also humility is nothing but the truth. Sometimes we can mistaken, you know, some signs of weakness as humility. You know, somebody told me that one time there was a priest who was preaching to people about humility, and then after that there was a lady who came up to the priest and told him, "Father, I can never be humble." And then the priest asked, "Why? You can pray for that virtue." She said, "I can never be humble because my husband always yelling at me and say, 'Don't be humble, don't be humble.' You know, it's always in her mind, her husband yelling at her, 'Don't be humble.' But her husband obviously had the wrong notation what it's really humble mean. You know, for him, you know, the woman who cannot make up her own mind, you know, who he's afraid to speak up her own opinion is humble in his mind, you know. But that's not humble, that's just being weak, you know. Being shy doesn't mean you are being humble. A person can be shy by nature, you know, really quiet, really resolved, and you think, 'Oh, what's a humble person?' It might not be humble at all. You know, it might be just a sign of weakness. So humility is nothing but the truth, but also you think less about oneself. Sometimes something that makes you look humble doesn't mean that you're really humble. You have to watch out for that. You know, if you tend to be more quiet, you know, if you tend to be more, just don't want to get into conflict because you are so afraid, it may not be humble at all. It might be only a subtle thing of pride, a subtle form of pride, you know. So it's something we really have to, maybe in the future I might be able to define that even more clear, what is humility. But for now, just keep those two definitions in mind, you know. But it's so important. St. Augustine would say that humility is the foundation of all virtues. And so in a soul, when it's not there, it's no true virtue. And so he also said that, you know, it's so necessary for perfection that all the ways to reach it, you know, the ways to reach to perfection, he said, St. Augustine said, the first is humility, the second is humility, the third is humity. If you ask 100 times, I will give you the same answer. So that's St. Augustine saying. St. Vincent de Paul said that humility is nothing but the truth, and pride is nothing but lying. So, if we are people who are prayerful, it also can be helpful, you know, if they pray in a sincere heart, to help them to be humble. Because knowledge of God and knowledge of ourselves help us to be humble, if we are really truthful about that knowledge. Because, you know, people who pray, it's like, you know, when the light shining through the glass, you see the dust more clearly. So when we pray because we have the light of God shining into our soul, we see our own imperfection more clearly. But also we see the benefits given to us by God, all the blessings, all the grace. So thinking about the grace that we receive and our own mystery help us to be humble. Knowledge of God, knowledge of self. But that humility is something that was combined with confidence and trust. So it's something that I mentioned earlier that is thinking less about oneself. You look outside of yourself, you think about God. Trust in God. And so St. Francis, you know, he point out humility have no trust that false humility. If we really have true humility, our distrust of oneself must be together with trust in God. So that trust in God is really important for the practice of humility. And then, St. Francis also think about that, if what is in you is good, you know, if it is something, it's a true virtue, then it's something that also make you more humble. If something good in you that make you arrogant and proud, then it's not true virtue. So, he find that it's a key for all virtues. And another thing mentioned that humility is the mother of all virtues. And also, humility and charity, they go together. St. Francis de Sales would say that humility is descending charity, and charity is ascending humility. So sometimes the balance of when to do things before other people. Sometimes people might want to hide their gifts in order to preserve them out of humility. But at the occasion call for it, we have to do things before other people. Through charity, so to perfect the gifts that we have. So it's really important for us to practice humility, because that really is the key for us to have true virtues in our hearts. And then St. Francis de Sales, you know, I mentioned earlier last time that when I write article, I love to use this out-of-print book, which is called The Spirit of Francis de Sales. It's a book originally written by a person who knew St. Francis de Sales, a bishop. And this book is it was translated into English, and it was copyrighted in 1952. So some of you were not born at that time, huh? So it's out of print. I don't find any company still printing that book. But anyhow, I find a lot of good information in this book, and I think it was because I when in seminary I heard that it is a book of one of the favorite books of Bishop Monroe. So that's why I just looked into used books website to try to get a copy myself. So. One of the things that really have to do with opposite to humility would be vanity. Vanity, the favorite word of one of my friends here. Vanity, vanity. Yeah. So you have vanity. So now St. Francis talk about vanity as you think yourself more than what you really is. You know, that's vanity. You think yourself more than what you really is. You know, you think yourself more beautiful than you are. So that vanity. And then so that will give you a sense of false security. But you're supposed to be, working harder or whatever, but you have the kinds of false sense of peace. You think, I'm all sufficient, I'm so perfect, you know. That's one kind of vanity. Another kind of vanity is that you always want a higher position. You know, you always want to aim for higher position. You aspire to a condition more exalted than your own. So, and then give you a constant state of unrest. You know, always unrest. You always want to climb higher and higher and higher and higher. death, unrest. So vanity either give you a false sense of security or peace, or give you make you really unrest because you know you never feel satisfied. You always want to climb higher. Now, St. Francis, you know, what is his opinion about climbing higher in the church? You know, basically for him, not important at all. There was one time a conversation in with St. Francis de Sales. They brought up there was a well-known bishop, and he always eager to see the cardinal head. I don't know why, it's only 35 euro. A cardinal head is only cost that much. But he was willing, he was seeking the dignity to be a cardinal, you know, I'm just joking. You know, cardinal head only costs 35 euro.
It actually does cost.
Only costs, 35 euro. It can, because when I was talking about that in a Saturday group, a Surrey group meeting, because there were some people who came back from Rome, and they said they were looking at the window, they called the cardinal head, is 35 euro. So anyhow, so of course, when I talk about he was designed for the cardinal head, that means he wanted to be a cardinal, not just the head. So, and so they were talking about that bishop. And then they mentioned because he was seeking that dignity so much that his diocese suffer because of the lack of proper attention. He somehow neglect his diocese and always seek for higher position in the church. And so St. Francis himself mentioned how much better it would be if he were already a cardinal. So
the bishop want to be pope.
So okay. Don't jump so fast. And then the bishop who wrote this book asked St. Francis, but why do you say that? And then St. Francis said, oh, he would then aim at something better. And then the bishop was surprised. What? Do you imply that he is ambitious enough to want to be a pope? You know? But St. Francis said, no, I did not mean that. I did not mean that. Rather, I was thinking of saving of souls. That's for him, it's the most important, saving souls, which is really the art of art, and which, when practiced, is the best way to serve God. So, and then the bishop asked him again, but need this dignity stand in the way? So, is the dignity of to be a cardinal really stand in the way of saving souls? And then he answers, surely not. Has not Cardinal Borromeo, St. Charles Borromeo, proved just that? I mean, though, that when this bishop is no longer engaged in seeking his position, so this bishop means the one they are talking about right now, who wants to seek for the red head. You know, if he no longer engaged in seeking this position, he might look into his own heart and then give his entire attention to his pastoral duties. And he was quite prophetic when this bishop actually became cardinal, then he no longer have so excited about that position anymore, and so he turned into pastoral care again. So the care of souls. Now both Pope Clement VIII and also Paul IV have high esteem for Francis de Sales, and Paul IV also have the intention of making him a cardinal. And it was known by Francis de Sales about that intention of the Pope. And one day, that bishop who wrote this book talked to Francis de Sales about that. And for him, doesn't care much. He said, now tell me, what St. Francis said, now tell me, how do you think that office would better help me to serve God? Is Rome a more advantageous place for sake of serving him than this little place where he has placed me? Would I find there more duties, more souls to direct, more foes to overcome, or more piety and devotion? And then the bishop replied to him, but you would play a part in the care of all the churches, and you would leave the direction of a particular diocese to have to direct the whole universal church along with the Pope and the Sacred College. And then Francis de Sales replied, it is not true that most eminent pious cardinal prefer to leave Rome where their work is primarily a matter of ecclesiastical duty and return to their pastoral charge where they may watch over their flocks and care for the souls committed to them. So, and then he also told a story about a particular cardinal being appointed archbishop, you know, when the Pope warned him, and then because at that time, a lot of time at that time, when people appoint as archbishop, it's more an honorary thing for them to be archbishop of a diocese, but they actually leave everything to the people in the diocese, but they are actually, the person is not in the diocese, but in Rome. But when that particular cardinal being appointed as archdiocese, he left for his diocese. So the Pope asking him, you know, are you leaving? You know, and then the cardinal say that, you know, that yeah, he's leaving. But the Pope offered him to give him a dispensation from the duties to stay in his diocese. But the bishop replied, Holy Father, that is contrary to what I've been teaching all my life in the schools. I've always maintained that the residency of bishops is a matter of divine right and hence indisputable. Because one of the important reform of Trent, that bishop must stay in their diocese. You know, because in those days, there's a kind of a practice is that people quite often may have one or two or three dioceses, but they are not there, you know. So, and then the Pope say, but at least remain with us half a year. And then the bishop say, but in the meanwhile, who will look after my flock? And then they say, then stay for 3 months. And, but you know, the bishop didn't want to, you know, so eventually he left and then he stayed for 3 years in his diocese. So, St. Francis says, always look at such dignity as worthless, except insofar as they make it possible for him to serve God and promote his glory. So St. Francis says, no desire to climb high, you know, in ecclesiastical dignity. And then also, because he knew that people held him in high esteem. And then, one time he complained about that, you know, he say, the truth seems to be that these good people, with all their expression of esteem, are really sowing the seed of a bitter fruit for me to gather in the end. And he said, when I am dead, imagining that my poor soul has gone to heaven, they will not pray for it and will leave me languishing in purgatory. So for him, you know, he just think that, you know, a little bit of work is worth more than many, many words. So for him, you know, doing the good thing for God is much more important than, you know, the praise and admiration draw from other people. St. Francis de Sales loved to measure spiritual progress by humility. He pointed out two signs of spiritual progress. The first sign is that you are willing, the prompt willingness to accept criticism and correction. That's the first sign of humility. So people give you criticism and correction, you accept them willingly and really quickly. That's a sign of humility, of spiritual progress. Second sign of spiritual progress is you don't overlook any opportunity to exercise humility, both active and passive. Now, sometimes you can have an active opportunity to practice humility, you know, like if you can say something to boast about the good thing you have done, that is something marvelous, but you keep quiet. That's an active opportunity. You make that your own choice not to show off, you know. So you have an active opportunity, but passive one is a bit like the first sign we mentioned. That sometimes we can passive humility is an opportunity for humility is that when people give you criticism, when people maybe somebody give you a bit of a humiliation, you know, or somebody makes fun of you, you know, for example, then but you don't yell back, you don't have a hard look on another, the other person, you know, you don't just give a evil look, you know, to the person that humiliated you. That's a passive way, an opportunity of practicing humility. So you don't overlook those opportunities. So those are the two signs that St. Francis point out as signs of spiritual progress. And then now we go to the second topic of today. Meekness. Meek. Okay. Oh, blessed are the meek, yeah. Blessed are the meek. So, you know, St. Francis would point out that humility makes our life acceptable to God, and meekness makes us acceptable to our neighbor. St. Bernard would say, as without faith, it is impossible to please God, so without mildness, it is impossible to please men and to govern them well. Now, St. Bernard also point out that some characters, they appear really gentle as long as everything goes well. But when there's any touch of adversity and contradiction, they immediately enkindle and begin to throw forth smoke like volcano. So he said that those people are like burning coals under hidden ashes. But that's not the kind of meekness that taught by Jesus. The meekness that we should imitate is the kind like lilies among thorns. Even though going amidst such sharp points, it's still smooth. Now, St. Francis de Sales, I think he basically mentioned meekness about meekness towards others and meekness towards ourselves. Okay? So meekness towards others. Okay, Okay. Okay, let me do it. Now, St. Francis de Sales said, I think I can read the quotation here. When you have to make arrangements, settle quarrels, or win others to your views, take care to be as mild as possible. You will accomplish more and conquer more readily by yielding and humbling yourself than by harshness and disputation. Who does not know that more flies are caught with an ounce of honey than with 100 barrels of vinegar? So if you are able to be mild, you can govern people much better. And St. Francis loved to say that again and again, blessed are the heart which can bend, for they shall never be broken. So if your heart is more flexible to people, you will never be broken. You are unshakable. So, and then St. Jane Francis de Chanel, who was the spiritual daughter of Francis de Sales, and together they found the Visitation Nun. She also reflect on her experience of governing other people. She said, I have turned forward and backward and on every side, and what conclusion have I reached? I've considered all methods of governing and even tried them, and have finally seen that the best is that which is amiable, sincere, humble, and patient. So, also meekness and gentleness help soften the heart to receive the grace of conversion. Basically, St. Francis tells us that you want to labor with fruit for the conversion of souls, then you have to pour sweetness into your seal, you know, and your zealous. You need to be mild. Because quite often the human heart, they become hardened when you are harsh on them. They are softened when you are mild to them. So, and then of course, for our good intentions or good intention in other people, Jesus blessed those good intentions. You don't want to destroy goodwill in other people, huh? So if we let them, those good intentions to his control, little by little, he will make them fruitful. So, St. Francis de Sales, you know, I want to jump to this little book here, you know. His another favorite motto would be, do all by love and nothing by constraint. You know, he finds that there are some people, they want to force people to obey them. Sometimes it can be bishop, it can be a pastor, you know. All of us want to force people to obey them. He said, you know, those people, those who love to be feared, fear to be loved. And they themselves are more afraid than anyone, for whereas other men fear only them, they fear everyone. Sometimes when you want to control everything, it's a sign that you are insecure yourself, put it that way. So, it's, you know, and then the other bishop, you know, that wrote this book, you know, because quite often when he governed his own diocese, he would consult Francis de Sales, you know. And then sometimes he the bishop can be a bit want to be strict on people, want them to obey and things like that, you know. And then St. Francis would say, how presumptuous you are. You want to fly on the wings of the wind and your zeal endangers you. Do you want to be more than God and bind the wills of those whom he has set, he have left free? And, you know, thinking about that, you know, for example, you know, God lead people free. God give inspiration. The guardian angels might advise people to do something good, but they never force us, you know. They leave us free. So when we govern people, we want them to just under our control and not give them any freedom. You know, in that way, you just want to go ahead of God. So that's what St. Francis is telling the bishop. You know, you shouldn't be too strict on your people. So that's St. Francis himself, you know, also talking about, you know, people who have, they are too zealous of doing things, you know. You know, he say that, you know, on seal, there is a harsh, bitter seal, which overlooks nothing, you know, exaggerates the smallest fault, and like an unskilled, you know, basically it's like an unskilled physician, a doctor, who want to cure a sickness, but just, you know, doing too much and make the sickness even worse. So basically he's talking about there's a balance. When some people, they are so zealous, they just don't overlook anything, they just pick on every single little thing. But they make things worse, because it's just like a doctor, if somebody is sick, you don't just get, you know, do things too fast on the sick patient. You do that step by step. But also there are some people, they just don't care much, they overlook everything. You know. But you know, of course the true seal for God would be that, you know, the true seal for God must be accompanied by knowledge and judgment. So sometimes you need to pardon certain things. And sometimes you just have to, you know, put up with them until the right time and the right place to correct them. Sometimes you have to slip over things, you know, for a little while. But of course, your intention is that eventually you leave nothing undone which can promote and increase the glory of God. So you're not lazy, but you're waiting for the right time to make the right correction. Now, and St. Francis himself is also somebody who have a great love for animals. A great love for animals. You know, one time they were hunting animals, you know, and he didn't want to see that, you know, and then when they cooked that, he just didn't want to even eat, you know, and say, oh, what a hellish pressure, you know. This is just how the demons pursue the poor soul by temptation. You know, he didn't want to eat the animal via being hunted by the other people. And then he would call hunting a serious venial sin, you know, because of course hunting is a mortal sin, but he called that a serious venial sin. And then, so the bishop asked Francis himself, you know, do you mean to say then that it is wrong to kill animals for the food of men? And then St. Francis said, so far as the food of men is concerned, the very words you use justify the act. That means that he considered the mere pleasure of hunting cannot justify hunting itself. So it is his opinion that those who are so compassionate to animals were likely to be the same toward human beings. So those who are good to animals also good to human beings. So, yeah. So is that why? So it also happened that quite often, it also happened in the life of Francis himself, when the animal being hunted, they by instinct, for some reason, they run to St. Francis himself for protection. You know, sometimes also it was said that when he was praying divine office, that the bird would come to fly to him, you know, and so he was a really, kind to animals, that even the animals would come to him.
Is he a friend of Francis?
I think he named after him, right? They are a few hundred years apart from each other, right? Yeah, 100 years, you know. Francis himself, he was, Francis himself was from the 16th century, I think, 16th or even 17th century. And then Francis of Assisi is in the 13th century. So that's 300 years apart from them. Yeah. Now, and then finally, let's also talk about the mildness, meekness towards our own self. Some people, when they make a mistake, they are harsh on themselves. They say, you know, they talk to themselves, you wicked man, you know, you fail again, you know, so useless, you know. And then they would talk to themselves like that. But, you know, Francis said, we say that you have to be mild to yourself too. Just like a parent, you know, correct the child, mildness can have more effect than being harsh, you know. So when you fail, you can talk to yourself, so okay, you fail, but we get up again, let's do it again, and so peace and calm. And then also, Francis himself give us so basically do it in a peaceful, humble way, but not excited and in anger. Finally, I want to share with you the four remedies from Francis de Sales against anger. So the first one is that to forestall its movement, if possible, or at least cast them aside quickly by turning the thought to something else. So when you feel angry, turn away from that as soon as possible. Run away from it. Turn your mind to something else. Second, in imitation of the apostle, when they saw the sea raging, to have recourse to God, whose office it is to give peace to the heart. So turn to God, ask God to help you to storm the anger, to calm the anger. And third, during the heat of passion, do not speak nor take any action as to the matter in question. If possible, don't say anything, don't make any decision, don't do anything. Because whatever you do under the heat of anger, usually you will regret that later on. You know, I would say the same apply to decision. You know, it's good to remind everybody, avoid making instinctive decisions. You know, sometimes if you have major decision to make, you know, sometimes, you know, when I know that I have to present something, let's say to the bishop, you know, I have to do something, I usually would write the thing way ahead of time, if possible. And then finish writing that, I let the sleep over there for a while to really, myself, you know, sink into my heart to really feel, is it really peaceful for me to carry on what I want to suggest, you know. I find that, you know, instinctive decision is can be dangerous, you know. If something important, you know, you don't make instinctive decision. You really allow yourself to have the time to, you know, maybe you can write out your decision, whatever, but let yourself slip over it for a while, you know. Let it really sink into your heart. And then you can really feel that more easily, is that really the right decision or not? Because if you're under the influence of emotion, quite often you will feel that's the most correct thing to do. But when your emotion passes, you will find that's the most stupid thing you've ever done. You know. So I think avoid a lot of regret in life, you know, take your time and if you know you're under strong emotion, ask other people to make decision for you. Or at least consult before you make decision. Ask other people, I think about spiritual director or people like that, but not everybody have a spiritual director. Yeah, so, and then number four, to strive to perform acts of kindness and humility towards the person against whom one is incensed, especially in reparation for any of a contrary nature. So if you have been angry with somebody like to Julie, then you try to be kind to her again and be polite to her again to in reparation for the anger that I expressed when she was shopping outside the window in Australia while everybody was walking by, and then I tried to look for her, and then I got angry because she wasn't around. Remember that? And then I tried to treat her more kindly after that so that I can make up for my sin of anger in Australia. Huh? Oh. You have disappeared a few times, actually. Yeah. But anyhow. I'm glad you are not going on in October. Oh, by the way,
I'll get lost, don't worry.
By the way, the new members, our pilgrimage in October. For the outside world, we say that we are full now. In the inside world, there's a 58 people plus me who are on the list, and then our maximum is 65. So that means there's actually 6 spot there, potential spot that can be filled. But for the outside world, we say that it's full, it's done deal. For the inside world, and within the prayer meeting, just want to give you an idea.
For the cool people.
Yeah.
It's not
so.
You have the itinerary online?
Huh?
You have the itinerary online?
Online? No, I don't put it online. It's for the inside world, right?
Yeah. Not for the outside world. We can make a private